I want to share some things from my heart. This is one of those days when I'm real sure of the message. Can honestly say that I never enter this spot to preach without feeling like God has spoken to me. I will get a guest speaker. I will call someone else. I have to have some inspiration and know that God spoke to me. There are times, however, when there's just a surety about something that's unusual. And you just know that that's what's for that day. And I, for my own spiritual food, was reading in 2 Kings, not really intending to preach out of it. And God just encouraging me from some things he gave me the year I took off 2011 and went to Colorado and fasted and prayed and spent a lot of that year in prayer, preparing for a new season. God gave me a lot of things that year. And I felt that God directed me in my own reading to go back and read in 2 Kings about Elijah and Elisha. And while reading there, I felt that God gave me some observations that very much were for you this morning. So I want to share those. I especially like the book of 2 Kings because 2 Kings 20 is the chapter that God gave me when I was in the hospital through a neat set of circumstances and the use of a faithful servant. God gave me the passage in 2 Kings 20 that I will heal you and add 15 years to your life. I'm on the 10th year. So we're going to find out in 5 years. I thought it meant 15 years added to my present age. I was 50 at the time. So I thought, well, I'm going to live to be 65. That doesn't go with the verses others were given. Pam was given the verse with long life, and 65 in long life in America. Pam was given the verse long life. One of my sons was given a verse that contradicted that too, and Scott says that it was 15 years added to what I was going to live. The longevity runs in the Robbins family. So we figured up 110. Now, I don't know if you guys will still let me preach when I'm 110. That should be interesting. I'm not sure watching the news how I feel about all this and the way the world's headed, but I want to be doing what I'm supposed to be doing. That is the important thing. But God did speak to me from 2 Kings, and I feel this is one of these days I feel that God gave me some observations from a powerful story that I believe is definitely for us this morning. And I want to read the story of Naaman. And then I'm going to go through some observations. And here again, I believe even this morning God confirmed that this is for us. So I want to just emphasize that to you. And God has the unique ability to make it for everybody in his own way. So the story of Naaman, powerful, powerful story. Now Naaman was commander of the army of the king of Aram. He was a great man in the sight of his master and highly regarded, because through him the Lord had given victory to Aram. He was a valiant soldier, but he had leprosy. Now bands from Aram had gone out and had taken captive a young girl from Israel. She served Naaman's wife. And she said to her mistress, "If only my master would see the prophet who is in Samaria, he would cure him of his leprosy." Naaman went to his master and told him what the girl from Israel had said. "By all means, go," the king of Aram replied. "I will send a letter to the king of Israel." So Naaman left, taking with him 10 talents of silver, 6,000 shekels of gold, 10 sets of clothing. And the letter that he took to the king said this: "With this letter I am sending my servant Naaman to you so that you may cure him of his leprosy." As soon as the king of Israel read the letter, he tore his robes and said, "Am I God? Can I kill and bring back to life? Why does this fellow send someone to me to be cured of his leprosy? See how he is trying to pick a quarrel with me." Boy, you ever have something go that direction? You thought you had it all planned out. It blew up in your face. When Elisha, the man of God, heard that the king of Israel had torn his robes, he sent him this message. Why have you torn your robes? Have the man come to me, and he will know that there is a prophet in Israel. So Naaman went with his horses and chariots and stopped at the door of Elisha's house. Elisha sent a messenger to say to him, go wash yourself seven times in the Jordan, and your flesh will be restored and you will be cleansed. Naaman went away angry and said, I thought he would come out to me and stand and call on the name of the Lord his God, wave his hand over the spot and cure me of my leprosy. Are not Abana and Pharpar, the rivers of Damascus, better than any of the waters of Israel? Couldn't I wash in them and be cleansed? So he turned and went off in a rage. Naaman's servants went to him and said, my father, if the prophet had told you to do some great thing, wouldn't you have done it? How much more then when he tells you, wash and be cleansed? So he went down and dipped himself in the Jordan seven times, and as the man of God had told him, his flesh was restored and became clean like that of a young boy. Then Naaman and all his attendants went back to the man of God. He stood before him and said, now listen closely to the wording here. He came back to the man of God after being healed of the leprosy, and he said, now I know that there is no God in all the world except in Israel. Please accept now a gift from your servant. Accept a gift for this miracle that's been given through you, prophet. And the prophet answered, as surely as the Lord lives, whom I serve, I will not accept a thing. I have written here, if I may paraphrase, he came back to give a gift to the prophet and thank him for the miracle. And the prophet said, put your MasterCard in the offering. Send us at least a $100 donation. Interesting the directions we've gone. The prophet of the Lord said, I will not accept a thing. I'm not suggesting arrogantly that ministries who give you something, that's always wrong, but I couldn't help but think of how we are today. The man of God, the prophet Elisha, happy to be the servant of God, no fanfare, simple instructions from God, and then when offered a gift, he said, I will not accept a thing. Okay. Observations. First of all, it says, Naaman was a great man, highly regarded, a valiant soldier, but, he had leprosy. Oh, the dreaded disease of the Old Testament that we read about, comparable to cancer today, only physically obvious. And I've done some study, no expert on leprosy, but actually I believe it has to do with affecting the nerve endings. And as a result, people are clumsy and they break themselves open and they're more susceptible due to their low immunities to lots of different things. And leprosy can go lots of directions, but there were whole communes of lepers, and you would have to cry out, unclean, unclean, and people would stay their distance from you so that you didn't get the disease. He was a mighty man. He was a man with ability and talent. He had had some great victories. He was a valiant soldier, but he had leprosy. Leprosy is a type or a symbol of sin in the Bible. Because sin is spiritual leprosy. It breaks us to pieces. Sin destroys. Sin is destructive in nature. The demonic in Mark chapter 5 who was scraping himself with stones, destroying himself, full of the devil. Legion was his name. 1,000 devils within him. What was he doing? Tearing himself to pieces. Sin is destructive in nature. And I couldn't help but feel heavy-hearted as I read that passage, he was a valiant man. He had such ability, a man highly regarded, but he had leprosy. And my mind began to wonder a little bit about the individuals that I have on my own prayer list. In the front of my prayer list is my own personal prayer list. As you see, whiteout is answered prayer, by the way, Kevin. Kevin teases me about using whiteout. Personal names of people I'm praying for. Then there's the church prayer list. And then there's the needs in the community. There's the needs within family, as we were anointed this morning. But I thought of the individuals by name that, oh, that's an awesome person with incredible ability, but they got a huge drinking problem. But they got an addiction that binds them and disables them and makes them fumble and sore and clumsy. Even as it festers and gets worse, they have to almost separate themselves and cry unclean and be in a commune with only those who are like them because they've separated themselves out into an abnormal life and their whole lifestyle has changed. They have leprosy. Watch for the people on your block, in your community with spiritual leprosy. And have mercy on them. Have mercy on them. They didn't know sin would turn out this way. Sin is fun at the beginning and starts out with thrill and excitement, but ends in destruction. And they're trapped and they're vulnerable and they're hurting and they're desperate. How many I know, I look on and I say, oh, what they could be. I see characteristics in them. I see qualities in them. What they could be, but they got leprosy. Observation number two. Church. Somebody had faith for Naaman. You got to get this. There was a little slave girl who had been taken captive that worked for Naaman's wife. And I just had a vision of my father in my head. I saw Daddy preach on this. And he said, can you see her over barefoot doing the dishes? I can visualize him leaning over the pulpit and telling the story. And she very cautiously, because she's just the maid, she says, now there's a prophet in Israel that could cure him. Didn't say you possibly could go talk to, maybe we could get you an appointment. She said, there's a prophet in Israel that could cure him of his leprosy. Now the bands from Aram had gone out and had taken captive a young girl from Israel. And she served Naaman's wife. She said to her mistress, if only my master would see the prophet who's in Samaria, he would cure him of his leprosy. Somebody had faith for him. Church, listen. Many of you were nodding when I was talking about the leper in your community. Leprosy is a type of sin. That person that you look at and you say they have such ability, they have such grace, they have so much to offer, but they've got a horrible addiction. They got a horrible problem. Start the faith with you. Look him in the eye. Not on the defensive. And say, God can deliver you. Faith sparks faith. And I have been amazed at people that I have sat down, and they came in and they were nervous. They wanted to talk to the minister and they were just a nervous wreck. And when they got there, they even admitted, they said, oh, I've been so nervous about this meeting. And they're breathing hard between talking and they're sharing all their problems. And it's so nice to walk over by that coffee table, kneel down in front of them and say, you don't have to go on like this. there's hope for you. That's what this sign on the side of the building is about. There's hope and there's answers and there's redemption that can be found. Somebody had faith for him, which brings me to the third observation. Your faith will spark their faith. I think sometimes church, I'm talking to the Church of Jesus Christ as a whole. I think this church does better on this than most, than many. But I think sometimes we're too busy talking about all the problems that people have. And from a prideful standpoint and from a critical perspective, all the things that's wrong with them. Who is it that you need to impart faith to? Who is it that needs you to look them in the eye? They view you as having it together. You're an expert in their mind. And who is it that I need to look in the eye and say, you can do this. You can do this. This works for you. It's worked for me. Yes, it's a process. And yes, it isn't easy. But 42 years ago, this young man's life was in a mess. No one had ever dreamed I'd have been a minister. Who is it that God would call you? These are just observations. I'll tie them together, but they're kind of unique too. Who is it that you need to have faith for? Who is it that maybe you've given up on? Or who is it that honestly, if you really look it in the face, you're critical of? And who is it that you need to have faith for? Your faith can spark their faith. I remember when Tony Winters shared a few weeks ago the story of him coming down. I think I even read it out of my book. Pastor of the Nazarene Church in Peru for years. Tony came down early to St. Vincent's Hospital and came to my hospital bed. It was the morning they were putting the port here. My white count was 137,000. They had to put a port here and get me on a apheresis machine. It spins the blood. Blood comes out of your body, spins the blood, extracts some of the white cells. They had to get my white count down to 80,000, Dr. Schultz said, before they could put me on chemotherapy. And I never will forget, they were getting ready to take me down and put the port in my neck, and they were all hurrying, and Tony came in quickly. He asked him in the hallway as they were waiting there to take me. He said, can I just see him for a minute? He went in, he leaned over, and he said, God woke me up this morning and told me, go tell Tom Robbins, I'm not finished with him yet. That was a rough morning in my life, but his faith sparked my faith. Sometimes when you're at work and you're self-centered and you're selfish and you're caught up in the job of the day and this aggravating stuff I have to do every day, there's a leper next to you that needs you to say something to them of faith, and it'll spark something within them. Are you with me? Sometimes just you telling them, I'm for you. Sometimes I text people and I just say, all I say is, I'm in your corner. Has anybody got that for me here? I'm in your corner. I know I've sent it to various people. I'm in your corner because I know, I don't say it arrogantly, I say it humbly, but I know the role that I play in their life. I understand I've been a guide to them, and I want them to know I'm in their corner, and they haven't got an easy life, and I'm in their corner. We're entering a season of tribulation hour. We've got to spark the faith of others by giving them the faith. And sometimes it comes through you. A little slave girl working in the household doing the chores sparked a miracle we've been preaching about ever since. She said to her mistress, there's a prophet in Israel, and he could cure him of his leprosy. She didn't know how it was going to be. She didn't know how long it was going to take. But she had the faith to believe that that would happen. And that sparked a faith in Naaman. Verse 7. Whenever you take a step, the devil tries to muddy the water. He tries to derail the plan. You need to be prepared for that. Whenever you take a step of faith, whenever you start a new direction, The devil wants to muddy the water and try to derail the plan. And I think that's exactly what happened here. There was a letter sent to the king of Israel. They were trying to do this thing appropriately. They thought they were doing the right thing. And there's lots of application of this, but I especially like this one for us this morning. The king took the letter wrong. It was a letter that Naaman was bringing that was asking, going by chain of command, the prophet in Israel is under your king, is under your authority. He's part of your country. We're requesting, king, that you cure this leprosy and bring this man in, this prophet. That was all misunderstood. The king, it says, that's interesting turn of events. He got all upset and tore his clothes and said, "Am I God? Can I kill and bring back life? Why does this fellow send someone to me to be cured of leprosy?" I think he's just trying to pick a quarrel. I think he's trying to cause problems. Just muddy the water. Anybody ever have that happen when you thought you was doing the right thing? Anybody ever have something where you just gave it your all and you thought you're right on track and the devil just derails it all? But I think there's a sense in which we need to kind of be prepared for that, kind of look for that, and kind of expect that, because the enemy wants to do that. I have written here, this always happens. Now, verse 8, God does it his own way. When Elisha, the man of God, heard that the king of Israel had torn his robes, he sent him this message: "Why have you torn your robes? Have the man come to me, and he will know that there is a prophet in Israel." So Naaman went with his horses and his chariots and stopped at the door of Elisha's house. And Elisha sent a messenger. This is a neat part of the story. Elisha sent a messenger to say to him, "Go wash yourself 7 times in the Jordan." The Jordan River in those days, now the Jordan River is a beautiful river. In fact, had the privilege of baptizing someone in the Jordan River. They wanted to be baptized in the Jordan River, no matter to me. Water's water, but they wanted to be, and that's fine. We were in Israel on a trip years ago. An elderly couple in the church paid for Pam and I to go to Israel. And actually, I had the privilege of baptizing 2 couples that went with us in the Jordan River. And the Jordan River at this point in time is beautiful, but that was not the case then. It's important that you know that in this story. The Jordan River was kind of considered a sewer drainage at this point in time in history. And all the refuge from the city went into the Jordan River, and most people did not want to go. It wasn't one where you took your boat and went skiing. Obviously, they didn't do that. It wasn't a place where you'd take the kids for a picnic. The Jordan River was kind of, boy, I don't know if I want to be around the Jordan River. Maybe a little bit like some of the rivers we've been around in Haiti. And it's interesting, and we're entering a key time of the story. Elisha sent a messenger out. I have God does it his own way. God does it his own. How many of you know that God does things his own way? Boy, get a lot of hands on that one. Just about the time, don't predict what the Lord's going to do. Because just about the time you think you know how God's going to do it, he'll do it a totally different way. He does it his own way. And it's interesting, the order of events here. Naaman, can you see him? He's a valiant soldier. He's got his posse with him. Boy, he's got his attendants, and he drives up in his fancy chariot, and Elisha sends out a servant. Boy, this deflated this dude, didn't it? He sent out a servant and said, "God does it his own way." He sent out a servant and said, "Go wash in the Jordan River 7 times and you will be clean." The first humbling, verse 9 and 10 that we just read. The first humbling, more to come. You can't receive what God wants to give you without a humbling. You got to be humbled. Jesus called out a child, Matthew 18, and said, unless you become as a little child, you will not enter in. I'm going to tell you, that's a gate we all have to go through. When you think you're ready, you're usually not ready. Moses thought he was ready, if you remember. Why, I know the story when I was a child, how that they put me in the river in the basket. And the king's daughter came, and I was raised then as my mother being my nurse, who was paid to raise me for the king's daughter. And I was raised in the king's home. Can't they see the talent and ability I have? I'm going to deliver the people of Israel. He wasn't ready. He thought he's ready, but he wasn't ready. God took him to the backside of the mountain to become a shepherd, which was an abomination to the Egyptians. He had been raised in a culture where it was an abomination to be a shepherd. That's the lowest job you could have. It's no mistake that God sent him to the backside of the mountain to be a shepherd for 40 years. And when God appeared to him in the burning bush to call him, what did he say? Oh, I can't do it. God spoke out of the bush and said, I am that I am. Go and deliver my people. He said, I can't get my brother Aaron. Get somebody else. I can't do it. When he thought he was ready, he wasn't ready. When he thought he wasn't ready, he was ready. And we got to be humbled to be used of God. And can't you see Naaman pull up with all the fanfare and the chariots and the fancy horses? And he pulls up out front, and Elisha says to his servant, go out and tell him. Can you see? Can you see? I don't get a kick out of that. I like satire anyway. But I can just see Elijah sitting there having his coffee. Who's that noise? Oh, that's that fella. He's a big shot. Big shot, too. That's the Secretary of State pulling up. Yeah, go out and tell him to dip in the Jordan 7 times and he'll be clean and whole. Drink his coffee. Well, I don't think I'm exaggerating, because Naaman went away angry. I thought he would come out to me and stand and call on the name of the Lord and wave his hands over my leprosy. No, God's not about making a big fuss. Jesus had no beauty that we would desire. Jesus wasn't a man that was advertising himself, pushing his ministry on people, coercing them. We've gone astray. Got to be humbled to receive the hand and touch of the Lord. And if you want rid of your leprosy, the first step is you got to be humbled. You got to look yourself straight in the eye and say, I may have made a bunch of money and my name may be Naaman, and there may be a lot of people bow when I walk by, but I'm no different than anybody else, and I'm born in sin, and I got leprosy, and this is eating me up, and I need the Lord. And when we acknowledge our need, the man who wrote the AA program understood that, didn't he? When I acknowledge my need and say, this is who I am, I got God's attention. Now, he hadn't been Jordan yet. There's a process. Hello? This was a process. He hadn't been to Jordan yet. He hasn't gone down 7 times. But this was the first step. He had to be humbled. God does it his own way. Verse 11 and 12, I read a minute ago. I thought that he would surely come to me and stand and call on the name of the Lord and wave his hand over me and cure me of this leprosy. Are not Abana and Pharpar the rivers of Damascus? Those were beautiful, beautiful rivers. The Jordan smelled. Interesting, God's instructions, isn't it? God does it his own way. Are not Abana and Pharpar the rivers of Damascus better than any of the waters of Israel? Couldn't I wash in them and be cleansed? And he turned and went off in a rage. Truth will either set you free or make you mad. I've been saying that for years. The truth will either set you free or make you mad. The truth is, he wasn't even close to getting rid of his leprosy till he humbled himself and followed God's instructions. American church is full of people writing their own rules. God has a way he tells us to do things, and he patiently waits, and then he calls again, and then he calls a third time, and then he calls a fourth time, and then he calls a fifth time, but he's waiting on us to hear his voice and obey it. that truth will either set you free or make you mad. Verse 13 and 14. Naaman's servant went to him and said, can you see him riding along? Can visualize this? The dust flying. You know, he's mad. Why couldn't I go out here at the reservoir and gone off the side of my pontoon boat and seven times send me to that sewer of the Jordan? What's a big, doesn't he realize who I am? What is this about? The servant's riding along over there, and he probably at first thought, I think I should probably keep quiet. You ever do that? You know, your husband or wife's aggravating, you think, this probably isn't the time to say anything. Probably should be real quiet. And he's riding along, and pretty soon he says, sir, if he'd have told you to do some difficult thing, you would have done it. Isn't it neat how God always comes back to us? If you're here today, this is a special moment. God's the God of second chances. You might have seen yourself in the first part of this message and said, man, I got the leprosy and I haven't let God humble me and I fought this thing. He comes back around. He's the God of second chances. He comes back around. I read Psalms 103, as a father pitieth his children. I'm a grandfather now, I understand that better. When Addison's up to bat and she's got her long blonde hair and her little outfit on and the helmet that's too big, and she's standing there, strike, I don't go, you idiot, keep your eye on the ball. I don't do that. No, as a grandfather pitieth his children. It's kind of pitiful. I'm like, come on, it's okay. You can do it. Keep your eye on the ball. And then if she strikes out, it's okay. If we can do that, how much more will the Heavenly Father? If we can do that, how much more is He? God is a 20 times, 30 times, 1,000 times better father and grandfather than I'll ever be. And I'm that good. Yeah. Oh, I'll give them chances. When Jackson drove the go-kart for the first time, and I think in his mind, he had in mind that you drive like this. So I got in and I said, go ahead, I'll push the gas. I pushed the gas and we started over. And I said, oh, no, no, that's fun when you're planning to drive, but when you drive, you hold it still. Oh, I get it. Okay, when you pass the white gate, you don't want to go out in the road with the go-kart. So you want to, when you get to the white gate, go into the grass. Easy. Okay, now make a big circle and come back. Oh, hey, this is fun. Hey, I'm driving. If I'm that good, that ain't all that great. That's what you're supposed to be. What is God like? As the heavens are high above the earth, so God's ways are higher than ours. Don't buy the lie. God's patient, He's kind. Now, if you're rebellious, oh, Jesus is going to come back as a warrior. If you're rebellious, He's going to come back, and He's not going to put up with that. The same Jesus that died on the cross and said, Father, forgive them, they know not what they do. John fell as a dead man on the Isle of Patmos when he turned and saw Jesus standing among the candlesticks. But we live, now is the day of salvation, now is the day of grace. We got lepers all around us. They're busting up their knuckles, they're sore, they're hurting, their joints are hurting, and some of them have gone so far they're almost in their own commune and just crying out, stay away from me, and they're even shunning you, and you're thinking, why are they shunning me? It's because they're ashamed. They know their life's in a mess. They need somebody to speak faith to them. They need somebody to believe for them. If it hadn't been for this little girl, where would Naaman be? Verse 13 and 14 is surrender. Naaman's servant said, my father, the prophet told you to do some great thing when you have done it. How much more then when he tells you wash and be cleansed? So he went down to Jordan and he dipped seven times. And he came up clean as a baby. Skin like a baby. Surrender and complete obedience bring a miracle. Let God deal with you. I don't know why he told Naaman seven times. Daddy used to act this out. Daddy was a good actor. He said, can you see the servant on the bank who told him to go? Andre, I can picture this. And that servant on the bank, and he goes down once and he comes up. And the servant says, go ahead. He said seven. Okay. Three, four, five, six. Oh, get serious. I got that mud all over me and this place stinks. I'm probably full of germs. He said seven. And he went down seven. He came up skinned like a baby. I don't know. I've walked with the Lord a lot of years and I know the Lord pretty well, and many of you do too. I don't know sometimes why the instructions are what they are, but I'm going to tell you something, they work. And I say this with no disrespect, but I'm at a stage in my own life. I don't have to go back and prove that by Abraham. I know it in my own life. I don't know why sometimes the instructions are what they are. I don't know. But I know that if you humble yourself and you follow through, they work. They absolutely work. Surrender and complete obedience bring a miracle. Now, stay with me. Don't miss this. This is the best stuff in here. This, I felt impressed strongly with this. In fact, I even texted this to some people who aren't here this morning. I felt like the church needed this. Okay. Following through is, I think, an area we dropped the ball. Following through on what God initially told us. Okay, let me read this. I'm going to expound on it. I'm not going to keep much longer, but this is the most important thing to me today to say to you. Following through on God's instructions. Naaman was told to dip in the muddy Jordan seven times to cure his leprosy. He wanted to take a swim in Lake Pharpar and get the same result. Following through on what God tells us is so critical. So many times we start with a big bang and we never finish. If God says seven, then it's seven. Naaman got his miracle when he followed through. This is an epidemic with American Christians. I'll say that again. This is an epidemic with American Christians. Impatience, lack of surrender, wanting quick results, and desire for excitement keeps us launching new things instead of following through with what God told us in the first place. Anybody with me? God has been speaking to me about this. I have written here, personal confession. God has been reminding me of the precious pad he gave me on my year off. Follow through on that, Tom. You know I spoke to you. Yes, 4 years have passed. Yes, some circumstances have passed. But there are things in that vision God gave me for our final season, that we're supposed to do. And I know that God spoke to me. And I felt like this week on my prayer walk, God spoke to me from this passage and said, Tom, I'm doing my part. I've given you the facility. I've given you an organization that's set up in an awesome way. It's like set up like a denomination, CMO is. I've begun to work on some things. Don't you fall short of what I wanted you personally to be as a leader. Okay. Absolutely. Absolutely. I want to be. So I got the precious pad back out that I get out from time to time, and I went back reading through it. And the promises God had given me in my heart was quickened several times of what God wanted me personally to be. Right down to the little things he wanted us to do to reach out to people. I don't know how all this applies to you, but I believe it does apply to you. And I believe this is the highlight of the message this morning. And I'm going to read that again. Following through on God's instruction. Naaman was told to dip in the muddy Jordan seven times to cure his leprosy. He wanted to take a swim in Lake Pharpar and get the same result. Following through on what God tells us is so critical. So many times we start with a big bang, but we never finish. If God says seven, then it's seven. Appreciated something Kevin said to me last fall. Haiti and easy. Hades is rough, rough. You got to have a break. It's intense. But one day when he was struggling, he said to me, he said, I know God spoke to me. He said, Dad, I'm kind of confused right now, but I know God spoke to me on that porch and said, come. And until he releases me of that, I've got to do it. Now, there may be a time he releases him of that. I've had the same thing. Lord, don't let me drop the ball on following through what you asked me to do. And I think this is an epidemic with American Christians. I think 90% of us have a bad case of ADD. I'm not trying to be cute here. I think it's in our diet. I've been watching this thing over the years, and it's getting worse. I think it's in our diet. I think it's in the preservatives. I think it's what. But there's people have trouble focusing, and it's getting to be where it's just a huge thing. I'm amazed. And I think the enemy uses and works in all these things, and I think it's an epidemic in America. Impatience, lack of surrender, wanting quick results, desire for excitement, or just have trouble focus. It keeps us launching new things instead of following through on what God told us in the first place. If God has spoken to you about something, I ask you this week, go back and say, Lord, what is it that you told me that I've dropped the ball? What is it that you spoke to me in that hour of despair? And I knew that I knew, and I called my friend, or I called my partner. I called and I said, here's what we got to do. Here's what we got to do. But somehow it's gotten lost in the shuffle. We don't get the blessing. We don't get the favor. We don't experience the skin like a baby because we drop the ball on following through. And I think our generation is so susceptible to this because of the media, and we're bombarded and our minds are jumping all the time. I don't blame you. I'm in the same world you are, but I think it's good to recognize it. What did God say to you in that hospital room, Tom Robbins? What did God say to you at that cabin on that Thursday morning when I was sitting in the pine trees on the hill and he said, I will give you what you ask. And I began very carefully and reverently, because I hadn't been given that offer. And I began very reverently putting together, oh, I will just ask this. I will just ask this because this is a valuable offer that's been made to me. And everything he said, he has answered. Everything he said, he has answered. He said, from now on, the rest of this week, anything you have broken through the principalities and powers, and that's through his grace, from now on, I'm going to answer anything. And I was amazed at how that affected me. I had no desire to say, give me this, give me this. I want a million. No. I was like, oh, Lord, don't let me ask the wrong things. Help me ask the right things. And one of them I asked was that God would put us in a place where we could fulfill our desire to help broken people. And God sent along a gracious couple to buy this property in 4 acres and give it to us. Is that an answer? People said, did you get confirmation? I'd say that's one, wouldn't you? This property's worth about $300,000. It's 4 acres on a U.S. highway that they want to put a limited access highway in later. And someone bought it and gave it to us. It's paid for. It's free. And that's just one of many things. What has God originally told you? And I felt like this week he re-challenged me and said, Tom, there's some things I said to you personally that I want you to be. Follow through. Follow through. Patience, 7 times. Patience. What is it that God's saying to you? Well, that's my observations from the story of Naaman. But need to quit. It's 2012. I'm going to leave that on the wall for a little while because I think that's key. If you want to take a picture of that, I think it would be good for you. I think we're more guilty here than we realize. I've had people come to me over and over and over and over and tell me of revelations they had and things God spoke to them, and I could see in their eyes that they had heard from God. But it wasn't long it was washed out. It wasn't long it wasn't followed through. Now, I'm talking about stuff you know God speak to you. We can come up with our hot dog ideas too, and sometimes those need to filter out. But those things that you know in your heart of hearts that God has spoke to you, I want to follow through because the miracle comes, the skin like a baby. When God said 7, it's 7. Let's stand together. Thank you, Lord, for this special time today, and thank you for this season when Kevin Abbey could be with us, and thank you for the good music today and the encouraging. I especially enjoyed the prayer song today. And thank you for counting us worthy through your blood. to be here and be part of your kingdom in this particular location, to be sounding the warning, to be sounding the call for folks to come to you. Lord, I'd ask that this message will not just go to lunch and just talk and kind of forget about what's been said, but rather in our own devotions, I would ask that each one here that hopefully has a devotional life and spends time with you, I would ask in Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday that maybe this be a time of assessing. I felt so strong about that paragraph on the wall that I can't help but think that it's finished just with my saying it. I'd ask that Monday and Tuesday and Wednesday, and I'd ask you as a congregation Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday in your own prayer, Lord, what is the thing or is there something that you've spoken to me about that I've not followed through? Help us to be very faithful for your coming back for the faithful. Watch over us throughout the day. May your blessing and anointing be on the teen service later today and the other ministries of CMO here in Jesus' name. Amen. You're dismissed.